any number of ways, as some of you have probably discovered, that you can, let me see. You with me just a minute? No, there are any number of ways that Unitarian Universalism can be presented and explained to folks. I could rattle off my, 2-minute elevator speech to the extent that I've got it in my head, or maybe talk about the long history of the Unitarian Universal tradition that brought us to this point, run through our purposes and principles, all those kinds of things, which are all very, very well and good. We hope that people who are exploring us will look into and check out all those things, but I've also come to discover that probably the best way to talk about who we are and what we're about is to have people who've been a part of the experience here in this congregation and with Unitarian Universalism to say a little bit about it from a very personal standpoint. And so today, two of our members, also members of our executive, our governing board, will be speaking to us, Dave Golden and Donna LaRue, on the significance of Unitarian Universalism in their life and being a part of this congregation. David is a, sorry to say, retired physician. He still works with the VA hospital up in there. Donna is a therapist and has been very much involved with our White Wing school program over the years. David, you want to take the lead here? Good morning. I hope that there are some people that are new here. Are there any people who are visiting? Maybe I can just. Okay, great. I've been a member along with my wife for about 5 or 6 years. I had never really explored any kind of religious affiliation at all in my adult life. In fact, had very little experience even as a child. And my wife had came from a different country and a different religious background altogether. Was also not somebody who was particularly drawn to become a member of a church or other religious organization. We were living nowhere near extended family. So we were pretty much developed our own network of friends and support in this community over a period of about 25 years. Raised our children, and everything seemed for us to be fine. We seemed to be reasonably happy, and we did have connections with our family that provided us with some sense of connection with them. But I think around the year 2000 or so, 2001, I don't exactly remember when, I think we both began to understand that this was not as secure a network as we had thought. Perhaps that happens when everybody begins to get into the near the 60 age and begin to reflect on the fact that things are perhaps not going to be as they were. And I think she, before I, realized it even first, and I think certain events happened around the time of 2000-2001 that probably in some conscious and subconscious way kind of came together. We began to lose parents. We almost lost a daughter. And I think we lost a sense of what our country was in terms of going from a place that we thought of more in terms of a sharing and generous place to a place that seemed to be more interested in the individual and individual greed and other types of things. And I can't say that it was any one specific event that occurred, but it was all of these things together that made us decide that we needed to expand our support network and look at other things. This particular church was not new to us as an institution. Our kids went to White Wing School in kindergarten. We were involved in a movement called Beyond War in the late 80s, which this church was a strong supporter of. And I knew Don Rowley, who was the previous minister, through my work at Hitchcock Clinic when he was on the local board of directors. So it was, and we knew the Brookses, who were very important members, who are important members of this church. So we didn't particularly look around. We didn't shop around. We came right here to see what was here, actually. The Brookses encouraged us to do that. And I remember coming in, and my first impression was that there were no icons or symbols anywhere around. I mean, it was sort of like nothing to draw your attention to anything other than the fact that it was like a big building filled with nice people and beautiful nature outside. And since I've been in other religious places where there was always some sort of a symbol other than the folks here, that was new. And when I saw the joys and concerns, I saw that people actually talked to each other, and that there was a concern and a fellowship that was obvious right away when people interacted in the service. I think that what finally maybe hooked me to come back was a little song that we just sang, The Spirit of Life, which I think in many ways, if you want to, it's number 123, read it. I think it really symbolizes for me everything that is about this church in one simple song. It's about compassion. It's about a spirit of connectedness with everything in our physical world. And it's about the fact that we all need to constantly expand the roots that hold us close so that we, in fact, can be individuals. I think that a lot of people that join this church perhaps are like us. We think that being an individual is something we can do all by ourselves. And I think Steve put it pretty well last week or 2 weeks ago when he said, actually, being an individual all by yourself is a hard thing to do. And I think it's a lot easier when you have a network of people and friends who can help you do that together. And so when the service moved on to the sermon, I realized there was also an added feature, and that is that here was a place where people could talk about the things that always made me feel proud about myself. Concept of generosity, social justice, and that I didn't have to feel embarrassed about doing that when in the greater world it seemed like the conversation was moving on to other things. I think the events of the past couple of weeks with a tremendous hurricane that knocked down the lives of a lot of people, showing the necessity for a strong sense of community, and then finally realizing that the concepts of individual greed and unrestricted marketplace manipulations was in fact going to draw us all down into a vortex in which we suddenly find ourselves having to all be together again in a rather interesting way. And so I think I feel very much at home here. I can't say that when I saw the title of this, how has it changed my life? I hope Steve wasn't looking for a born again moment. Probably not. But I can say that it truly has allowed me to be an individual in an easier way. And I really also would like to say it's a real fun group. This is not a dour group. We have a lot of fun. Even when we're doing strategic planning, we can laugh. I've never been in a happy strategic planning group.
So I urge you to try.
CNN this morning, and they said that a lot of the pulpits today were that some of the folks were going to endorse people like McCain, so that they were warning that the IRS was going to be out there, and that the pulpit was not to be used to endorse political candidates, and that they were going to watch for that. So I'll be quick, write something else. Nonpartisan way, I will say that in an attempt not to have a Sarah Palin moment, I didn't wear any lipstick. I wrote everything down, and I'm just going to read from it, so I don't get all befuddled. In a fast-forward moment, I'll share with you what my oldest son tells me about his experience in the religious education Sunday school portion of his experience here this year. He's in the fourth grade. Dean and Krista Early are not teaching him how to have faith in God. Bryce told me they explore beliefs and they discuss facts and options. He told me that facts and options are welcome, but check your judgments at the door. And when I say that, I want to underline how to have faith in God. Now I'll go on to tell you some about me. In order to articulate how this UU church has made a difference in my life, I want you to know a little something about what life was like for me before I began visiting some 13 years ago. I was raised in a church that taught me how to have faith in God, as my family before me had learned how to have faith in God. I attended Sunday school and I produced arts and crafts depicting history that was dictated in the Bible. This education on Sundays, it went on for 12 years, 8 years in Sunday school and 4 years in a youth group. studied the Bible. In the middle of it all, I remember at 11 years old, I was in a Girl Scout troop, and we were pursuing a badge and had to visit local churches. Well, Milford has a UU church. So we went to the UU church in Milford. It was 1975, and it was like hippie fest, which it was really cool and far out, man. Peace, and it was awesome, and it was really scary. As part of the Sunday service, everyone received a piece, this is Noah, everybody received a piece of paper and a crayon. You know where this is going if you've been here before. Everyone was asked to draw a picture of themselves. And then in my worst fear, at 11 years old, it was like a nightmare. People stood up in the Yankee Swap style. One person would share their drawing and then they'd point to another person. And I thought, oh my goodness, what if it happened? I was completely unprepared at 11 years old to share any insights about who I was. We were all a bit perplexed about whether or not we had actually attended a church service when we left that home. We had been to the Baptist, and we had been to the Methodist. I remember feeling bad that they didn't seem to know about God or religion. As I entered my 20s, my understanding of God shifted. I found myself gravitating toward and embracing socially liberal causes. As a member of the gay and lesbian community, my relationship with the God of my childhood came into question. There no longer seemed to be a way for me to fit into the congregation of my childhood. As the youth rep on the pastoral search committee, I had taken great pride in my relationship to that church and to that God. It was during the AIDS epidemic, remember that, in the 1980s, when my minister, the minister, came out as a gay man. Shortly after that, the congregation asked for his resignation. It was at that time that I began looking in books other than the Bible for teachings on spirituality. All the while, my life was happening around me. I built a career and a business and a relationship, and by the age of 30, I started to feel roots. I moved to Merrimack with my partner of now 13 years. And this is where you all come in, and this is how you changed my life. Now you see, with roots, sometimes the tree bears fruit, and my biological alarm clock went off. California Cryobank, thank you. So I began searching for a religious community to raise my future children in. Not knowing anyone in coffee hour really helped because it catapulted me into this religious education program that we have at this church. I still find children to be a great joy, in most cases, easier to talk to than adults. I am, after all, a work in progress. So for 3 years, I found a comfort zone with the children of this congregation, and I learned about acceptance and tolerance and truth and diversity, sacred spaces and special places, and our neighboring faiths. All the while, we celebrated together all of the above. I taught your children in this church that we help people celebrate themselves and each other, that uniqueness is a wonderful fact, and that we are all works in progress. I read them stories from the Bible and taught them about the Quran and the Torah. They would laugh or they would gasp, and they'd draw pictures of how love and acceptance and worth and dignity needed to be weaved into these stories. They taught me that this would be a wonderful, loving, kind place to raise my children. I can report, after observing both sides of the coin, that the 11-year-old children in this church would feel very comfortable with a piece of paper and a crayon in this service and being asked to talk about themselves and who they are. It's a ritual in this church that, and a lot of you share our summer experiences with each other when we begin regular service in September. We call it a water ceremony, and each family can come up in the front and share a little bit of water in a big bowl and tell about their experiences that summer. 10 years ago, my partner and I walked to the front of this church with our water. See, there's tissues, I'll probably cry. 10 years ago, we were here. 10 years ago this month, Kathy poured the water and stated that the water had come from our doctor's office. There was a polite pause, and then I grabbed the microphone and I turned sideways, I had been skinnier then, and I touched my belly, and I said, it's from our obstetrician's office. And there was a huge applause and great cheers. it's not every day that being a lesbian in New Hampshire, you get that kind of thing. So it was some years later that the rainbow flag found itself out front, and that changed me. So I take that feeling from that day 10 years ago when you celebrated me, and I go into those classrooms and I celebrate your children. I have two wonderfully perfect boys who are spectacular works in progress. They attend public school in a right-wing community, and they hold their heads up high. They celebrate diversity, they confront bullies, and they wear ties at school board meetings when I take them to speak about how their teachers are important to them and that they don't want the budget to be cut. There's no way to say how thankful I am to all of you who teach me every day how to teach them. Thank you.
Choice when I asked these two folks to speak, and I have just had that confirmed. Wonderful. I thank both of you. Donna, David, that was really very, very moving and almost makes me wonder if I want to add anything to that at all, but what the heck, I'm here. So thank you again. I hope that when we have our second, our coffee hour gathering, you want to get together and have some further conversation with either of them or any member of this congregation, because we've all got our stories about what brought us here. So, let me leave you with a few of my own thoughts on the same topic here. I also had to realize that there's a certain irony in my asking Donna and David, that would have applied to anybody else, to talk about why or how being a Unitarian Universalist changed your life. It's ironic because I became a Unitarian Universalist in large measure because I didn't want to change my life, or didn't want to change a particular part of my life anyway. I didn't want to change my means of livelihood. 30 years ago, hard as that is for me to believe, I knew I either had to change my religion or change my job. That was kind of what that came down to. More to the point, my religion, my faith stance had already changed. And it changed to the point that I was having to make some career choices. Now, on a day-to-day basis, I was enjoying myself about as much as I ever had. This was during the 1970s. I was a university chaplain. I was operating in kind of a broad-based liberal Protestant Christian mode at a very fine university up in central Wisconsin, having a wonderful time, hanging out with students, offering whatever advice and direction I could as they set out on their life journeys. By that time, I had already long departed the very conservative evangelical brand of Christianity in which I had been raised. I was basking in the more liberal stance that I had come to in the very liberal theological school I had attended and graduated from. So why would I want to change a life that I was enjoying so very much? Well, I found out that doing an honest inventory of oneself, especially when it comes to matters of belief, can be a bit of a dangerous thing, especially if you're taking it seriously. I did not feel the need to escape from my religion, as I had some 10 years earlier, when the faith in which I had been raised came to no longer work for me. This time I realized that something had happened in a more osmosis kind of a way, instead of a sudden, blinding light. I had realized I had become a religious humanist. I believe that the search for meaning and purpose and spiritual depth in living, which is what I believe the religious journey is really all about, I believe that was as important as ever. And I wanted to keep working with people who were on that journey. I decided also the journey is really more important in many ways than the destination and the truths that people come to on his or her journey. I also came to feel they don't need to be contained. They need not be contained in any one single set of beliefs or confined to any one faith tradition or way of thinking or way of looking at the world. So where was I supposed to go with all that? I was being supported by a number of very good, fine, mainstream Protestant denominations that I respected and honored very much. But when I realized I can't really have these people keep paying my salary, because that's kind of where my own thinking is going. And so I changed my religion so I wouldn't have to change my job And over the ensuing 30 years, one of the real joys, one of the continual life-changing experiences that I've had, is one that you have just witnessed here this morning. The greatest joy in being in this ministry is hearing some of the stories like we just heard a little while ago. This church has been in this community now for over 180 years. In fact, this building you're sitting in here has been here for nearly 180 years. It was founded in one of Nashville's more historically significant places, the Abbott Spaulding House, right up the top of the hill here, when in the fall of 1826, a group of people gathered in the home of Daniel Abbott and wanted to have the Unitarian Church in Nashville. Many years later, the Universalist Church downtown also joined with them. One of my colleagues in the Unitarian Universalist Ministries, named David Simlera, he's the minister of the Union Church of Austin, Texas, and he stated that our Unitarian Universalist congregations, and we've seen this borne out this morning too, he has said our UU congregations exist as places where people can discover what is worth believing. I like that. For one thing, it belies the notion that a Unitarian Universalist congregation is a place where you can believe anything. Because once you start to sort out for yourself what is worth believing, what is worth betting your life on, what is worth investing your time and your energy in, even when it comes to strategic planning workshops, when you decide to make those kinds of things, you find very quickly that you cannot just believe anything. You have to very carefully and thoughtfully and joyfully choose what it is that's going to make a difference in your life and your world, and then you take it from there. As David pointed out, it's an individual decision, but we offer a community where you can make that in concert, in fellowship, in communion with other people. I know we Unitarian Universalists tend to get a lot of mileage out of the metaphor of the journey. We probably overdo it at times, but it still is a good one. Life is a journey. Religion, as we understand it and live it out here, is also a journey of hope and discovery and promise and joy, along with the tragedies and the challenges that are also inevitably a part of life. It's all part of the mix. It's a journey, as I just noted, that draws on the wisdom of many of the world's religious and philosophical traditions, as well as that of many wise teachers, both ancient and modern. So let me see if I can get down to the end of this. I'll give you the 2-minute drill, I hope, on where my own journey has brought me to this point in my life. What I find worth believing at this point in my life, being in the UU ministry has helped me come to that. While I don't have a specific name for it, and although I know the term God works for some, I do believe that my life is part of a larger reality, it's part of a larger mystery, part of a larger presence, part of a larger narrative within which I live and I move. And here I am in this great mystery, and as I am, I look for guideposts as to how I can most best and authentically live, how I can live in ways that give me personal fulfillment, and that connect me in meaningful and loving ways to others, and give me some encouragement in my own efforts, small though they may be, to make our world a better place for all. I live in the mystery. I look for guidance. I find many guides, both ancient and modern, to help me do this as I continue on my way. Some of them were referenced in that rather playful, while also making a good point song we opened our service with. And of course, one does not need to be a Unitarian Universalist to take the kind of stance or belief towards living that I have just described. But I find it works for me, as well as for many of the people that I've been blessed to be a minister with over the past 30 years. So I'm going to end with this and get us into our closing hymn here. Another metaphor for who we Unitarian Universalists are, what we're about, in addition to the journey, is also the dance. I really came to appreciate and love the idea of religion as a dance as I worked on the biography and wrote the biography of the author of our closing hymn. Rick Mastin just passed away this past May after a long, long, long dealing with prostate cancer. The words to Rick's songs is really a poetic rendition of the promises we make to one another here. They're a poetic way of stating the covenant we make with one another, that we will be together in the good times and the bad times too. We make that promise to one another as members and friends. So call it a journey, call it a dance, call it what you will. We also call it a religious community, and what we hope is the best sense of the word. So the door is open, the road is there, The dance is on. We'd love to have you join us. Let's sing together number 311.